Laudator Jesus Christus, Vatican and World News.
In the headlines this Friday, the 28th of February, faith leaders urge G20 ministers to prioritize debt relief over repayments, and the Holy See reiterates its support for a two-state solution for Israel and Palestine. But first, an update on Pope Francis's health as he continues to recover from pneumonia in Rome's Gemelli Hospital. In the Vatican, I'm Francesca Merlo. Pope Francis's health continues to show slight improvements. A most recent update from the Holy See press office on Friday morning stated that the Holy Father spent the morning reading the newspapers before continuing his treatment. According to the Thursday evening press release, the Pope's clinical condition continues to improve, though it does remain, quote-unquote, complex. Twice daily health bulletins have noted that the Pope continues to engage in work-related activities as he undergoes his medical therapies. In fact, from Rome's Gemelli Hospital, Pope Francis has sent a message to participants in a course for those responsible for episcopal liturgical celebrations at the St. Anselm Pontifical Institute of Liturgy. In his message, the Pope encourages participants to deepen their theological and practical understanding of liturgy in service to the people of God, and he urges liturgical leaders to prioritize simplicity, avoid personal recognition, and foster full participation in worship while remaining attentive to the faithful's needs. Over the last couple of weeks, people all over the world have been praying for Pope Francis. Most recently, a group of Buddhist monks in Sri Lanka gathered spontaneously to pray for his health and for his speedy recovery. As Linda Baldoni reports, a ceremony in a temple in Colombo was also attended by the head of the communications office of the Bishops Conference of Sri Lanka, who described the Buddhist ritual as a very moving moment.
The special Puja ritual at the Arasravaka temple in Sri Lanka's capital, Colombo, took place before a picture of Pope Francis when he visited the temple in January 2015. The monks of the Mahabodhi community offered flowers and drinks to the Buddha, paused in meditation and recited passages from the scriptures of their faith. Together with a group of believers, they gathered in meditation and prayer for the Pope's health. The ceremony was also attended by Father Jude Krishanta Fernando, head of the communications of the Episcopal Conference of Sri Lanka, and two of his brother priests. The monks, Father Fernando explained, offered flowers and water to the Buddha, meditated and recited verses from their scriptures, asking for his guidance, for wisdom and compassion. Describing it as a very moving moment, Father Fernando said the gathering of the monks was a spontaneous gesture. The Pope's humble presence here 10 years ago left a special impression, he said, in the hearts of our Buddhist friends. Concluding, Father Fernando said, "We were very touched by this spontaneous gesture." Pope Francis, he added, with his attitude of dialogue and sincere fraternity towards all, left a legacy of empathy and closeness that we still feel here today and that is reflected in a fruitful way in our relations with Buddhists and with other faith communities. I'm Linda Bordoni.
Traditionally, the Pope presides over the celebration of the Ash Wednesday liturgy. However, as he recovers in hospital in Rome, the Vatican has announced that this year's celebration will be presided over by Cardinal Angelo De Donatis. The Mass and procession will take place on the Aventine Hill in Rome on the 5th of March. According to a message from the Archbishop, the Master of Pontifical Liturgical Celebrations, the Ash Wednesday celebration begins with the stational liturgy at 4:30 p.m. in Sant'Anselmo, followed by the procession to Santa Sabina. Then at the end of the procession in the Basilica, the Eucharist celebration will take place, including the rite of blessing and the imposition of ashes. In other Vatican news, in an interview with the Jesuit magazine America, the Vatican Secretary for Relations with States and International Organizations, Archbishop Paul Richard Gallagher, has reiterated the Holy See's position concerning a two-state solution for Israel and Palestine. Christopher Wells tells us more.
Despite the devastation and the ruins that it is in, Gaza is still home to Palestinians who for generations have been born and lived their lives there, who want to remain there, and who want to rebuild their lives there. That's according to Archbishop Paul Richard Gallagher, Secretary for Relations with States and International Organizations, in the first part of a long interview with Jesuit magazine America. Responding to a question about U.S. President Donald Trump's proposal to resettle Palestinians from the Gaza Strip elsewhere, Archbishop Gallagher said, "The Holy See has always maintained a position regarding forced migration. We do not believe this to be the correct road to pursue in resolving any form of problem, whether it's war or conflict or anything else." He recalled that many of today's Palestinians or their closest ancestors had already been forced to leave their properties from other parts of the Holy Land. "It's not right to say they're a problem," Archbishop Gallagher insisted. "They're people. They're human beings. And we have to try and act in a way that is respectful of them, of their dignity as human beings, and understand the tremendous suffering that they have been through and that they're going through day in and day out." In the face of such a proposal of resettlement, the Archbishop said, "one is just lost for words." He reiterated that the Holy See continues to call for a two-state solution, one Israeli and one Palestinian state. Archbishop Gallagher said the Holy See continues to support a full ceasefire, the release of all the hostages, the protection of civilians and full respect for international law, the reconstruction of Gaza, the stabilization of the situation in the West Bank, and respect for the Palestinian people who are there. Finally, he said, "We do believe that the resolution of the Palestinian question is at the heart of so many of the problems of the Middle East, whether it's Syria, Lebanon, or elsewhere in the region." I'm Christopher Wells.
More than 100 faith leaders from around the world have issued an urgent appeal to G20 finance ministers who are meeting this week in Johannesburg, urging decisive action to end the injustice of poor nations spending more on debt repayment than on health and education. Caritas Internationalis has led the initiative in response to Pope Francis's broader call for fairness in global financial systems, particularly within the framework of the Jubilee of Hope. Lisa Zingarini reports.
Far from being just a moral plea, the letter presents a documented insight into the shifting dynamics of international debt, highlighting how in recent years private financial institutions rather than government or multilateral bodies have become dominant creditors. This trend has led to more complex and prolonged debt negotiations as private creditors impose significantly higher interest rates and resist restructuring efforts. The consequence of such financial mechanisms are devastating. Millions of people suffer from hunger, inadequate public services, deteriorating infrastructure, and intensified climate disasters due to their country's constrained fiscal spaces of manoeuvre. To counter this crisis, the signatories propose four concrete policy actions for the G20. First, they call for a robust debt cancellation framework that genuinely reduces debt burdens rather than merely offering temporary relief under outdated measures. Second, the letter urges legal reforms to ensure that private creditors, who now hold the largest share of poor countries' debt, are compelled to participate in debt relief efforts instead of exploiting their leverage to demand unsustainable repayments. Third, the appeal advocates for the restructuring of international financial institutions to make them more inclusive of indebted nations and more attuned to social and environmental imperatives. Finally, the letter supports the establishment of a UN debt convention that would enforce responsible lending and borrowing practices, create transparent regulations, and introduce a global debt registry to enhance accountability. Concluding, the signatories emphasize that enacting these changes would not only address the current debt crisis, but also foster a fairer and sustainable global financial system as called for by Pope Francis. I am Lisa Zingarini.
In world news, on Thursday, Save the Children sounded the alarm in Afghanistan, warning that this week's deadly floods in the country claimed nearly 30 lives, among whom several children. Deborah Castellano-Lubov reports.
The aid organization Save the Children on Thursday decried that at least four children were among the 29 people killed in recent flooding provoked by intense rainfall in Afghanistan. This extreme weather has become less rare for the Middle Eastern nation. Torrential rains and flash floods devastated northern Afghanistan in 2024. At least 200 people were killed, and more than 3,000 homes were destroyed. On the 25th of February this year, flash floods ripped through western Fada province, washing away 21 people, while three more were killed when a hailstorm caused their house to collapse. Further east, the agency AFP noted six people were killed in Helmand province, including a child struck by lightning, and nine in Kandahar province. The director of Save the Children in Afghanistan, Mr. Ashad Malik, recently decried that entire families have been swept away by these floods and at least four children have lost their lives. For the survivors, he noted, there will be long-term consequences for their well-being. Floods, he noted, like these, are yet another sign that our climate is changing too quickly for families in Afghanistan to adapt. And this, he noted, is affecting the least responsible, the children. According to studies, the rise in global temperatures is leading to increased and more intense rainfall in Afghanistan and in many parts of the world. And these extreme weather events are very traumatic for many already vulnerable populations who are then left with long-term difficulties. I'm Deborah Castellano-Lubov.
And finally, as Sudan endures the world's worst humanitarian crisis amidst violent conflict, UN and government agencies are working urgently to contain a cholera outbreak. UNICEF has warned that nearly 300,000 children are at risk from the disease, which often spreads through untreated water, as Devin Watkins reports.
In response to a rapidly spreading cholera outbreak threatening thousands of lives, the UN Children's Fund, UNICEF, has teamed up with the World Health Organization and Sudan's Ministry of Health to curb the spread of the disease. A UNICEF report highlights that over 292,000 children are at risk of cholera in Sudan's White Nile state. More than 2,700 cholera cases were reported in the first 2 months of the year. The UN agencies have ramped up interventions to curb the outbreak with a 6-day cholera vaccination campaign in the Kosti and Rabak areas. UNICEF has also provided cholera treatment kits and deployed frontline workers to treatment centers to strengthen care. They are training public health workers in infection prevention to monitor the situation on the ground. According to the report, the campaign aims to reach over 1 million people with oral cholera vaccines. Cholera cases are surging in several regions of Sudan, worsened by a major power outage and cut off water supplies in White Nile State. Limited or no access to safe drinking water, coupled with a sharp drop in vaccination rates, is worsening the crisis and heightening the risk of cholera, particularly in displacement camps and overcrowded urban centers. White Nile State hosts an estimated 650,000 internally displaced people, as well as 400,000 refugees. Population movements at the border with South Sudan are adding further challenges to controlling the outbreak. According to UNICEF's representative in Sudan, cholera poses a serious threat to children's lives and can lead to death within hours if not treated quickly. UNICEF and its partners are distributing life-saving water, sanitation, and hygiene supplies in affected locations to ensure access to safe water. While addressing the immediate emergency is crucial, said UNICEF, Sudan must strengthen the systems that underpin the services children need. I'm Devin Watkins.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of Vatican and World News. For more on these and other stories, please visit vaticannews.va. Many thanks today go to Emil, Rodrigo and Jack, and to our sound engineer Alberto Giovannitti in studio. In the Vatican, I'm Francesca Merlo.